Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your podcast book club. I'm Kim, and I'm here with my book besties, Anna and Christina.
Hi, Yay!
We're back, baby. Oh my gosh, it's good to be back on a main feed episode. It has been a while.
It has.
And I am thrilled to be here with you to discuss Quicksilver by Callie Hart. Oh!
Guys, I'm so excited.
I could not be more excited. I am giddy, guys. This is so fun. And we're back together, the trio's here for this fun, silly book. What a treat.
It really, really is. This is such a treat to be back. I missed you guys. I missed recording. And we are so excited to dive in. But of course, before we do that, we need to do some Patreon shout outs for our tier two book betches.
Woo!
This is so fun to do everything again. I'm like, it's just amazing. I missed you guys.
We missed you, Kim. Welcome back.
I know.
Thanks. Okay, so tonight we are going to be shouting out Ruby Star, Allison Lebossier. Love that last name, by the way.
Wow, that's beautiful.
I know, it really is. Lauren E. Scarlett, Catherine Ray, and Joanne. Hello, Joanne.
Hi, guys.
Thank you guys so, so much for supporting us. It truly means so much to us, and
it does.
We literally couldn't do this without you.
And we couldn't, and we're so thankful for you every single day. We love
Seriously,
you.
Seriously, really appreciate it.
You're the best. Okay,
so before we dive into Quicksilver, I am going to give us a quick little spoiler-free thoughts on the book because people have requested that we give little spoiler-free thoughts in the beginning in case they haven't read the book yet and so that they know what we're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the best way I feel like to summarize or sum up the feeling of this book. Now, Kim, I know you were not on the When the Moon Hatched choo-choo train with us.
Was not.
But this was like a perfect fantasy book hangover cure. When the Moon Hatched was heavy in world building and this book was wonderful, straightforward, simple without being simplistic. And it was so much fun to read. Callie has written a great cast of characters. This is, I think, a really good mix of plot and spice.
Yes.
You know, it's almost like one of our guilty pleasure palate cleanser romance reads, but make it fantasy.
Yes. Totally agree.
Exactly.
I will say that for me personally, I found the first like 35-40% to be a little slow.
Mm-hmm.
And then around the 40% mark, it really picked up. Now, ideally, would that be the case? No.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a KU fantasy book, and it was a lot of fun. And once you get to that point, it's a page turner.
Mm-hmm.
The world, the characters, Fisher, Saris, the side characters are so enjoyable. I can't wait to talk about Carrion.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, those are our spoiler-free thoughts, and let's dive in. So from here on out, spoilers for the entire book of Quicksilver by Callie Hart.
Yes. Oh, let's dive
in.
Love it.
I'm excited.
Me too.
Okay, so I'm going to take us through some of the world building. We're just going to kind of
do it.
Breeze through this really quickly. So
build that world.
Quicksilver takes place basically in two different realms. We have the Fey realm, Ivellia, and we have the human realm, Zavarin.
Mm-hmm.
So the capital, Zavarin, where the Silver Palace is, which is where Queen Madra lives, the way it's described is, quote, fashioned after the shape of a wheel around the city's outer limits, the different spokes, walls designed to keep people contained in their wards. So Saris and her brother Hayden live in the third ward, which is the poorest ward. They don't even have running water. Like, it's disgusting. We will discuss the bathing situation later, but it's gross.
We had PTSD about the water.
It was disgusting.
Stay tuned for more on that.
Yeah.
So that is Zavarin, and the Silver Palace is where Queen Madra lives. More on her later. Ivellia is the Fey realm. We have most of the story takes place in the Winter Palace, where Bellican is king of the Ivellian Fae. We also see Kalish, which is where Kingfisher's home is. The best way I felt like that made sense in my head was that you have the Winter Palace, and then Kalish and the surrounding cities were like dukedoms, kind of. Like, Kalish is Kingfisher's birthright, basically.
At some point, he's like Lord of Kalish.
Exactly, yeah. So I was kind of like, in my head, I was like, he's a duke. It's kind of how I thought of it.
Precisely.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. His mom was like Lady of Kalish.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we also see Sanisroth, which is the vampire homeland, and that's where Malcolm lives, who is king of the vampires, and we will get to him later. Sanisroth is also where Kingfisher spent his sentencing with the maze, we learn at the end of the book.
Right.
There are other cities in the Fey realm, but currently they're not important to the plot, so I feel like we can just table those for maybe the next book if they become important. Okay, so what do we know about the Fae in this world? It felt like a very traditional, stereotypical way of viewing the Fae.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like kind of how you think about them in like lore, fantasy lore.
Agreed.
So they can't lie. They are tricksters by nature.
Tricky, tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And they take bargains and deals very seriously and follow the word to a T, which we will learn later with Saracen Fisher. Mm-hmm. But don't make a deal with the Fae. Literally, especially in this book.
Yeah. It's like just rule number one.
Rule number one.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with Fae, you gotta be careful about your
careful
words.
With the fairy wine and careful with your words.
I was about to say. Rule number one, don't drink the fairy wine. Rule number two, do not make a deal with them.
You're okay? So right. Wine should be one. Yep, yep.
Every time we discuss the fairy wine, it turns into a whole conversation on social media.
I know. We're like, why, you guys? Why?
Like, doesn't it sound like so much fun, though? Don't you just want to try the fairy wine? I'm like, it doesn't usually work in people's favors.
No. No, not a good idea.
I would still probably try it. I would still. Let's be real. Out of the three of us, I'd be like, let's do it. Come on.
Let's just do it. Let's do it.
Okay, so also, this was really funny to me because we have talked about this so much in other episodes. The fact that Fae have heightened senses, and we're like, do they just walk around like smelling sex all the time? You must walk into a bar and people are hitting on each other and they're just like reeks of sex and lust. So Fisher, finally, we have like conversation with a Fae person. Mm-hmm. He basically says, careful human, we Fae have an excellent sense of smell. You'd be amazed what we can scent floating on the air. And he's referencing the fact that she's kind of turned on to him right now.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Such a little funny scene right here because he's talking about her being turned on. It's right after she punches him in the face.
Yeah.
And he shows up and instead of getting himself healed, Kingfisher's still such a poo-poo head at this point in the book, but this was like a really great moment. He shows up and he's got this cut in his face and Sarah says like, well, aren't you going to go get that fixed? Like, can't the Fae just snap their fingers and make that go away? And he's just like looking at her and he's like, I like being surprised, because she surprised him when she punched him yesterday. I'm also a fan of aggressive foreplay. It'll be a fun reminder. And so he's like wearing the scar with pride.
I love it.
I love it.
I love every single thing about that.
I was like, oh,
obsessed.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is when she starts to like choke on her food and he just goes, swallow.
Guys, the way that when I read that, I was like, oh, you shut up right now. He didn't say it. Did he say it?
Stop
it's
it.
Italicized. It's italicized.
Swallow.
When he said swallow, I was like, oh, God.
Oh, God. Okay.
I will.
Sarah's is like turned on right now. And that's when Lane walks in and she goes, she smells the air and she's like, damn it, it smells like a brothel in here. And Sarah's turns beet red because she's the one that's turned on. And Fisher covers for her and he starts laughing and smirks. And he's like, oh yeah, sorry. We were at the, you know, out last night. I'll go take a shower. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's like, wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
Loved it.
Love it.
Okay. So anyways, that's the world we live in, or that's the world that the Fae live in. So I'm going to quickly summarize just the beginning portion of this book because I really, really want to get to the Fae part and the Fae realm and where that's where our story picks up. So when we first meet Saris, she steals this metal gauntlet from the Guardian. And a Guardian are basically Queen Madra's like soldiers, her elite soldiers. And she wants to sell it because it's made of like a precious metal and it's worth a lot of money. And like I said, she and Hayden live in the Third Ward where they're really poor. And so she wants to have a better life for them. So she steals it. She escapes back to the Third Ward and she's talking to Carrion. More on him later. And she gives her brother the bag with the gauntlet in it. And Hayden is just like not the brightest bulb on the tree. And he takes the gauntlet out and he's just like showing it off and looking at it. And of course, it draws attention and the Guardians show up. And long story short, there's a skirmish. And Saris takes the fall. And she's like, it was me. It's not my brother's fault. Take me to the palace. Mm-hmm. And so she goes to the palace and she's brought into like this throne room. I think it's called the Hall of Mirrors.
Yes.
Yep.
And she's being dragged by like the head soldier. His name is Harren. Guys, God. I really thought he was a love interest for a second.
Same. The terror that I felt when I was like, okay, they're having some moments of connection. Yeah. Okay, this is, I'm sensing some vulnerability on his end. This could be it.
Because we were told that he was mean to her. Mm-hmm. So first Carrion shows up and he calls her a bitch. I was like, oh, okay, this is the love interest.
This is him.
Mm-hmm. You both were ahead of me and you're like, nope, keep reading. I was like, oh, it's Harren. They're sparring. There's a little sexual tension.
Yeah.
And then he skewers her with a sword. I was like, well, I don't know how we come back from that.
I literally said to Christina, I was like, okay, I know you said it was kind of like Rowan, but I just don't know where we go from here. Like, there's a sword through her stomach into the ground. How are we coming back from this as a couple?
She was shish kebabbed.
How do we come back from shish kebab? We just can't.
I just don't see a path forward for us. You know what I mean?
It really puts things into perspective when we were setting ourselves up with this and then we meet Fisher.
Yeah.
He is not a walk in the park and we'll get to him. But no, he's not shish kebabbing.
No.
The bar could not be more. we're on the ground.
The bar is buried 10 feet under the ground.
Literally, when Fisher started doing his shit, I was like, okay, well, we didn't skewer her, so that's a step in the right direction.
So we're okay. It's gonna be okay.
He didn't stab her and attach her to the ground with the sword, so, you know, I guess I can forgive it.
I think we can get past this. It's fine.
It was really funny being the one, so I finished the whole book before the two of you even started.
Yeah.
So I had text prepping them both. I was like, all right, you know, Kim, you're gonna probably have an issue. I need you to just trust me, go forward. He is rude, but like, you just gotta keep going. I promise it'll work out. And then to Anna, I was like, so he is a little mean. You're gonna like some of the sassy foreplay stuff, but just keep trusting me. Just keep going. And so now I set up in their head that both of them were gonna like, not sure if they're gonna like the guy for different reasons. And then they both were like, is it him? Is it him? Is it him? Is it him? No.
No.
But is it him? But is it him?
No.
No. Like, if they will both just get 100 pages in, it is so obvious the second Kingfisher walks on this page. He literally, like, the entrance from the pool, it's like,
he's god of death. I go, oh, okay.
I'm like, if you just keep going, it will be so obvious.
Yep, literally, dark hair. I was like,
guys, I'm 0 for 2 right now. It better be this god of death dude who just waltzed in through the Quicksilver.
And it is. Thank you, Callie. It was clear.
Yes. Okay, so... sorry, we digress. So basically, Madra, the queen of the humans, which, y'all, there was obviously something off about her. She was giving me, like, really creepy vampire Twilight. I don't know. She was so off. It was, she was like a child.
She was.
It was weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, I don't know why she doesn't age. Oh, well. And just like, no one cared to like question it.
She's like 500 years old.
And I was like, well, clearly there's some magical things going on here for someone who like says there's no magic,
Right.
You know, all the things, but mm-hmm. also. So she doesn't age, but everyone's like, well, that's just because she's so powerful. No.
She's quote unquote human. Yeah, right.
Not how that works.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay, so Ceres is sentenced, and basically Madra says, I'm going to come after your whole family. I'm going to kill everybody in the Third Ward. And Ceres is like, fuck that. So when Madra leaves, Harren is like, sorry, I gotta kill you. Like,
I feel bad about it, at least.
Yeah, like, he's like, I'll make it fast. And then he shish kebabs her. And so in the Hall of Mirrors, is this, the only way I could think about it was, like, King Arthur and, like, the sword. And there's, like, mm-hmm. a sword inside this solidified silver pool. And she mm-hmm. reaches for it and pulls it out. It's literally King Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
And the Quicksilver, because she's already hinted at in the beginning of the book that she can, like, talk to metal. So she starts talking to the Quicksilver in her like dying moments and commands the Quicksilver. We of course don't realize at this point that it's Quicksilver, but it is Quicksilver, and commands it to attack Harren. Mm-hmm. And in doing this, in pulling the sword out, she has awoken the Quicksilver. And so here, I'm going to just describe what the Quicksilver is. It's basically like a magical element, metal sort of thing that acts as a portal between places.
Yeah.
And worlds.
Yeah.
It's been dormant for hundreds and hundreds, if not like 1,000 years, I'm not quite sure. So mm-hmm. she activates it by pulling the sword out. We later find out that Alchemenian swords, which is what that sword is,
mm-hmm.
can, quote, sever the energy of Quicksilver, paralyzing it. So Madra was able to basically paralyze all the Quicksilver, because when you paralyze one pool, it's like a chain reaction and it freezes all pools across all worlds, all realms.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so she, using that sword, was able to freeze the Quicksilver to stop all travel between realms, because before this, mm-hmm. fey, humans, other worlds could travel using the Quicksilver. It was almost like apparating, I guess, or winnowing, if you've read any of those books that those come from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So she activates the Quicksilver, it's starting to melt, and in walks Kingfisher, our god of death. And
hello.
He sees this dying human, and he was gonna leave her there, but of course we find out later it's his mate. And so he's like, I can't leave you. Which also cracks me up that the first time he sees his human mate, she's bleeding out intestines.
Yeah.
And we find out later is so dirty that her hair is matted to her. Like, she hasn't had a bath in her entire life, basically.
Yeah. And it's hot there, guys.
It's a desert.
It's a desert.
No.
She's sweaty. She has been sweating her whole life. I think his first words are like, are you fucking kidding me? I literally think those are his first words on page. He looks at her, he's like,
God damn it. My mother couldn't have gotten this more wrong if she tried.
And also, if we think about this, he's been in this terrible scenario, this terrible thing, and this
yes.
awful thing, whatever. And he's like,
yeah.
I've been summoned here. And he's like, all right, I'm getting out. And then he's like,
ah, oh, fuck.
Oh, this is what I gotta deal with. And she's, is that who
God
I think?
God damn it.
Just, he like looks up, he's like, really, Mom? Really?
Are
really?
You fucking kidding me
she
right now?
She smells, she's covered in dirt, her guts are hanging out, and she doesn't have pointy ears, Mom.
What the fuck?
I've got enough to deal with. I've been in a maze merry-go-round for 100-something years. I just want to get out. I don't have time to deal with my literal dirty human mate right now who's dying.
Oh, Lord.
But sure. Let me help you. Here we go. Here's my necklace.
Yes, here's my pendant. And that's basically where we pick up in the Fae Realms. So, Christina, will you take us to the Winter Palace?
I would love to. Everyone, welcome aboard your train to the Winter Palace. Here we go. Okay, I will be your tour guide. No. Okay, so we're going to call this section Winter Palace. Just as Ada told us, this is both Sarah's and our first glimpse into this new Fae world.
Yeah.
Something about the juxtaposition here of desert world and the cold winter world was just chef's kiss to me. I ate it up with a spoon. Loved, loved, loved it.
Perfect.
Okay, so Sarah wakes up here after being healed by Fae magic, and our plot just really jumps off from here. This is like where we're going from, okay? This is our starting point, really. It feels like the beginning was fine. It kind of felt like the setup really to this.
Yeah.
Okay, but before we jump into said plot, we're going to introduce some of our cast of characters, and we're going to kind of use them to help move us through these early plot points.
Yes.
So first up, we have Everlane. Everlane is our princess in every sense of the word.
She really is
the princessiest princess that's ever princessed. So she's also the first person that we meet, and she kind of acts as our guide, as well as Sarah's guide, to the Fae, mm-hmm. to the court politics, to how things work, to what snow is, to what baths are. All sorts of important things that you need to learn as a girly showing up in the Fae realm.
Gosh, sorry, I forgot. She's like, what is this cold thing falling from the sky?
She's like, it's snow.
It's snow.
Yep.
You dumb bitch.
That's snow. We're in the Winter Palace. You gotta get really used to that real fast, girl. It's everywhere.
Get it together.
Okay, but I do think, Anna, I do want to give you a chance for a second to speak on Everlane, because I think you have the hottest takes of us. So in general, just like, what are your thoughts on Lainey?
Here's the thing. She's not a bad person. I didn't hate her.
No.
I didn't dislike her. I just found her annoying. And this is just a writing choice probably Callie made, but I found her to be almost vapid. Mm. I was like, this is her one female friend in the book. The only other female, really. And she cries all the time, which I'm not saying we can't show emotion, but it was giving like hysterical woman kind of to me.
Mm.
And I was hoping that it was going to be a little bit more of a deeper connection. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that bugged me the most, and again, this is not so much about Everlane, it's just the way she was written, mm-hmm, is mm-hmm. when Ren and her are having a conversation, it's after Fisher kind of has this big freak out. He's still, you know, coming down from his Quicksilver manic episode. Ren is trying to explain how hard it's been. I think they're talking to Sarah, and it's really hard to see him go through this, blah, blah, blah. And Everlane's reaction is basically like, well, yeah, but it was just too hard for me to think about, so I just chose not to think about where he was. And I was like, well, that's a really nice privilege for you to have as his sister.
Right.
I was like, that's okay to protect your peace, but it was the way that it was written, I think, that bugged me.
Yeah.
It wasn't that she was a bad person. I just wanted like another level, mm-hmm. like a little layer to her. And maybe we'll get that in book two.
Agreed. I think that
that's what
she was very one note. And I think that hopefully we'll get more from her in the books to come.
Yeah.
And I do think that specific example that you just used of her being like, well, it was too hard for me, so like I just put it in the background of my brain.
It was very Scarlett O'Hara. Like, I'll think about that tomorrow.
Yes. And I think that really stood out because it was specifically juxtaposed with Sarah being like, I have to go get my brother.
Yes.
My brother's in a bad place. I cannot eat, sleep, breathe until we get my brother back. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why it really amplified that feeling from us a little bit.
That's a great point there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so some facts on our girl, Lainey. She is a one-note princess, but she is a good tour guide. Also, mm-hmm. she's Fisher's little sister. Not the greatest little sister either. Her father is Bellicon the king, mm-hmm. making her a princess. Also, just a little tidbit here on Bellicon. He is the actual worst of shit. He killed her and Fisher's mom after Lainey was born because she didn't bear him a male heir. Just, I mean,
so
truly
gross.
The worst, the absolute worst. Oh, he also sold her to Malcolm. So like, if you just think he can't keep getting worse, he does and does. Okay. And to piggyback off what Anna said, I do think she is going to play a bigger role in book two. I think we're setting that stage mm-hmm. for her right now.
Mm-hmm.
And something that we really, really hope we're going to get more from her of in book two is this hopeful headcanon side romance story that we've developed with her and Ren. Here for it. We want this so bad, truly, mm-hmm. in my soul. I think it's what we're doing, but if it's not, I'm going to be really sad, Callie. Okay, so let's talk about Ren really quick. Renfus, the sweetest of sweet, sweet, sweeties, guys. Mm-hmm. My God, I loved mm-hmm. reading him. He mm-hmm. was what we needed in that moment. He was a good balancing act. He mm-hmm. really, again, We sensed a love connection with him and Lane from the beginning.
Absolutely.
But he was this steadfast character. This very nothing ruffled him. Mm-hmm. And then the moment we see him get truly, truly distraught was when Lane was kidnapped by Malcolm. He's on his knees. He's so unwell. It's really giving us friends to lovers. Okay. But his other big act in the book is he really serves as this source of a great insight into Fisher for both us and Saris. You know, we also immediately like him. Like I said, he's a sweet sweetie. He's a great guy. Immediately on page, we trust him. So him being so close to Fisher innately tells us that Fisher's a good guy deep down.
Yes.
Those were our context clues from the beginning of meeting Ren, because he's also terrified for Fisher. He needs to get that pendant back. He's stressed for him. He's worried about him. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we're like, he's worth worrying about. Like, those context clues.
It's a good writing choice.
It is. It is. So, all right, let's talk about our girl. Our girl, Saris.
Sarah.
She's here. She's the best. All right. Well, sometimes she bugs, but overall, she is the best. Okay. She is sassy. She is impulsive. Yeah. She was really, really fun to read. I think especially she was fun to read specifically being in her head.
Yes.
Her POV. Mm-hmm. She was relatable while also feeling unique. She really gave us Selena vibes in TOG. Mm-hmm. This same sense of like self-confidence, take no shit attitude, which was really, really important, I think, in her dynamic with Fisher in particular. If she hadn't been so confident, if she was more meek, none of this would have worked. So we find out she is descendant of Fae and an alchemist. Oh, so convenient. We find out her name, Saris, is actually a Fae name, according to Lane, which also that everyone's like, huh, casual, let's keep going again.
It's a Fae name. Anyway.
Strange. Okay, no one cares? Cool. All right, but jumping back into plot a little bit, she wakes up in the Winter Palace. As we've said, Lane has been there, like, kind of taking care of her, making sure she's okay, nursing her back to kind of health, whatever.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
But she still does have that pendant on her neck. Ren quickly comes in a tizzy, and just is like, I need the pendant. I need it. I need it back right now. Fisher's not doing well. He's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs downstairs. We need that pendant. And she's like, fine, fine. Here, I don't need it. But that is an interesting first note of us for Fisher. We're like, what does that mean? Why does he need the pendant? Context clues are contexting happening. Okay, now, this is something we do need to talk about when discussing Saris, and it is the bathing situation. So this poor, 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 sweet girl.
We have to discuss it.
It's something we've discussed a lot, the three of us. And listeners, I'm sorry, you must now discuss it with us as well. So we are supposed to believe here this girl has never taken a bath before, because also let's talk about water is
a scarcity.
Because let's also talk about Queen Madra, in her selflessness, has rationed the water for the third ward. And I don't mean just like rationing, like, okay, you guys get a certain amount each day. No, no, no. They have like zero water, you guys.
They get, I think it's six.
New year, new you. New Disney Plus watch list. And with so many titles to explore, finding your perfect pick is easy. From the intensity of The Bear to the comical but cryptic mysteries in Only Murders in the Building, or the thrilling story of Shogun. January just got better with Disney Plus. Tap the banner to learn more. 18 plus subscription required. Learn more at disneyplus.com.
Ounces a day.
I need you guys to think about how little that is. That is nothing.
It's a very small amount.
It's so little. I will say I am a little confused how they have a working functioning bar making cocktails and beer, but like, fine.
That is fascinating.
Like, is that water the unfiltered
Stop it. No.
Where do we get the water for our cocktails?
No, I don't understand. No.
Okay.
Is it like back in the medieval times, like beer was safer and cheaper?
Yes, maybe that's it. Let's just say everyone's drinking beer.
The ice and the water in the cocktails.
Well, it's like when we go to places and you don't drink the water or the ice. Don't drink the ice.
Okay, that thought's gonna leave my brain.
Yeah, maybe that's a thing. Everyone just gets the beer. There's no ordering. It's just like, this is what we get.
This is what you get and you don't throw a fit, right? Mm-hmm.
This is what you get.
Because that water, as we've kind of hinted about, is like filtered.
It filters solids and that's about it.
But solids. We also didn't mention about the water is that it comes from the rich people's
sewers. That is what I meant. When I say solids, think about what that means when it comes from the sewer.
But not the liquids.
Now. Oh, God.
I'm going to vomit.
I want to throw up.
So apologies for taking you on that journey, but that's what you get. You have to live this life with us. You have to live our truth along with us, guys.
The way that we would all immediately perish if we somehow got, like, sent back in time to the medieval ages.
Nope.
We would just take one look and we go, well, take me out back.
I would walk into that desert and say, fare thee well. Take me out.
I can't fill up my Owala? What do you mean?
I'm going to get wasted off of your beer.
And I'm going to hit the road.
I'm going to get lost in the woods and we'll see what happens.
And don't come after me.
Don't come after me.
Gonna go take a nice nap in that sand.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
And that's it.
Okay. So yes, she does go take a bath though. She's like, what do I do with all this water? What do you mean I bathe in it? And then there is a ring of dirt on the outside of the bath. Her hair is matted. There's a lot going on. What I really wanted was I wanted them to be like, okay, we can handle this. Here we go. Okay. This is the toughest project any of us have ever handled. We can do it. Now I need you to get out of the bath. We're going to refill it. Get back in. Get out. Refill it. I just kept thinking of her sitting there in like water you couldn't even see through. It was just like dirty water. And I was like, this isn't helpful.
No.
Get her out.
We need
out.
To rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat.
Get her back in. You know, logistics that I would have really cared to see here. Okay. So let's move on. Thank you for going on that gross journey with us. Hopefully you didn't vomit as
deepest
we
apologies,
to.
But it has taken up a lot of real estate in our minds, so we did need to
address it. Okay, so let's talk about her powers. So Ceres conveniently harbors this like long lost fae power of alchemy. I really did love alchemy being a part of this. I feel like we don't read that much, and that was interesting, felt cool. Did it always make sense? No, but like, did I need it to? Also, no.
No.
Okay, so basically, she's the only person in existence who can speak to and manipulate metals in this way. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, she can do this with the Quicksilver. Hugely important. It's her chosen one thing. Like, that's her big thing. Okay.
Right.
There are three types of alchemists. She's this third type that pretty much seeks to create and invent by transmuting metals. All right. The other two are like, they study it and they seek it to cure illness. And she's like, no, I'm going to use it to make stuff. Okay. So like Anna said above, traveling through the Quicksilver though, you do need a relic. So relics are the strongest when created from something important to a person. That's kind of what we're assuming given all the gathering of the rings from the soldiers. But like, that's what we're going.
That's what I'm guessing. I couldn't figure out if it was that, if it was just because their metal was such a scarcity. And so the rings were just a way of getting metal. I don't know.
Either of those seem valid, yes. But we need a relic to go through the Quicksilver.
Yes.
When you don't have a relic, bad things happen. You go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Okay, so Fisher therefore needs Ceres to create these relics for all his soldiers so they can travel via Quicksilver and win this war against Malcolm and the Feeders. And also the other two, but they don't know that. All right, so the way that they are going to do that is we're going to spend a lot of time in forges. Forges are going to be prevalent, but it's super convenient though that that is going to be our locale for this project.
Yeah.
Because our girl Ceres pretty much grew up in a forge with Elroy, her adopted daddy-o kind of figure, mm-hmm. and was trained as a blacksmith. So check and check, she's ready to go. All right, so let's talk about Kingfisher. Fisher.
Oh,
Kingfisher, our newest shadow daddy. All right, so
I'm so excited.
He is the grumpiest grump. He needs a nap. He needs some snacks. Needs some sex, which she gets. yes. But before we kind of talk about our trajectory with him, we have a lot of thoughts on him as a character. But before we get there, I do just want to talk about him related to Quicksilver quickly. So he has been infected by Quicksilver because basically Bellicon pushed him into a pool of it when he was young and he wasn't wearing a relic. And like we just said, that's bad news bears. So the Fae healers were able to remove a lot of it, a lot of the Quicksilver, but some of it still remains inside him, as evident by the silver in one of his eyes. So now he has to wear his pendant at all times because without it, the voices in his head are unbearable. He becomes mad and aggressive, and pretty much he becomes what we saw of him that first scene in the throne room. He is thrashing. Mm-hmm. He's just like a monster. He's a dog, like they call him, just all these things. He isn't himself at all.
Right.
And then, and I think you wanted to mention something here about...
Oh, I remember Kim and I talked about this in our chapter chat, and I was trying to rationalize his behavior, not just towards Ceres, but in general with the Quicksilver. And the way that I kind of thought about it was like chronic pain. It's like people who live with chronic pain tend to be grumpier. They tend to be short-tempered because it's constant. Your body is constantly having to like trying to feel okay and you can't. Mm-hmm. And to me it was like the Quicksilver was like in his mind, almost like a chronic pain. Like he's he hears voices, he sees hallucinations. It's a constant effort to try and overcome it. I mean, I suffer from back pain, and when I have a flare-up, I'm so uncomfortable, and it's I can't sleep, so I'm grumpy. I'm doing the basic day-to-day is uncomfortable. And I felt like for me that was kind of not excusing his behavior, I'm just saying it was a way for me to kind of put it into perspective across the story, basically.
Exactly. And I think that's a great lens to look at him through, and I think also a great segue to go into our thoughts on him in general,
which there are many.
We have many. So yeah, I think in general he was too mean for me at the beginning. I did appreciate seeing her punch him and seeing her hold her own, and the banter moments were fun. But overall, he was just too mean for me at the beginning. Yeah. I, like I said, don't think any of it would have worked if she was meek at all and could not hold her own. Mm-hmm. But like Kim, we talked about at some point, I think you phrased it really well, that there was also an imbalance of power there, which was huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just felt like him being so powerful and her being this human, which he loves to remind her all the time, how she's this weak, powerless human who's fragile and could die at the drop of a hat, and he's this super powerful fae.
Yeah.
It just kind of felt a little icky to me. And I know he was generally grumpy with everybody, but he was very clearly pointedly mean to her specifically. Yes. Like, he was grumpy with Lane and grumpy with Rin, but he wasn't cruel to them necessarily. And we obviously learn more why, but I just, again, if you know me, you know I just don't like it when the main male character is cruel to mm-hmm. his future beloved. Mm-hmm. And we all obviously went into this book, you know where it's going. So I was like, why are we being so mean though? I get that you're grumpy. I get that there's a lot going on in your head, but like, let's take a deep breath and just not be so mean to her. It's not her fault.
Yeah.
She didn't
ask for this.
I could swallow the comments more. I think what bothered me was when he just let the fox bite her and he just watched her and she's like screaming, get the fox off. And he's like, well, we have to learn a hard lesson. I told you not to pet the fox. I'm like, okay. It's like telling a child not to touch the hot stove. When the child touched the hot stove, you don't just go, well, sorry, you fucked up. Well, like, no.
Not going to help you. Your fault.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
That really bothered me. Like, the physical act of that really, I was like, why do we have to do that?
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't skewer her. Again, that was the bar.
Anything better than that.
Anna, he didn't stab her with a knife. So I don't know what you want. What do you want from him, Anna?
I generally want more of a protective vibe and an I'm obsessed with you vibe from my main male characters.
Yes.
And he was not giving that us that until, like, I would say 75% in. So
yeah.
I do think that took a little too long for me. However, when we got there, I ate up with a spoon and effectively just forgot about the beginning. So
correct.
Should I have had to do that? No.
No.
But I did. And I've thought about this a lot since finishing. I do think a dual POV would have really helped with a lot of this.
Oh my God, yes.
I think we would have spent the whole book making so many excuses for him. The mate reveal would have been lost for us, but I think I would have rather had the dual POV and that moment not have been a reveal than to have read it like this, I think, actually.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, Christina.
I think that overall, of course, we're still obsessed with him, and my God, was he sexy.
Yes.
But we couldn't not talk about the fact that he is just so mean to her for a lot of the book.
Yeah, we had a lot of people DM us being like, I can't wait to hear you guys' thoughts because I have a lot of conflicting thoughts about the book and I just want to hear y'all's perspective. I'm gonna assume that that's probably what they meant, whereas there was just, you know, there was parts that I was like, I have so many notes that was like, Fisher, that's not kind. Fisher, we're not being nice. I don't like that.
Yeah. What I personally was hard for me to get past was the calling her like a human bitch in heat comment.
Yeah, I did not like that.
That one was the extra icky one for me that I just glossed over. But in going back and making notes, I did read that and was like, yeah, still, especially knowing everything I know, I still don't like it. But I am going to forgive it because at the end, I'm obsessed with him.
And yeah, for sure.
So
for sure.
I just forgive it. But
you know, what's funny is there is a line that Callie writes and I was like, she is setting us up. She literally says, the Fae are different than human. They speak and act differently than human. I mean, it wasn't that explicit, but it was this little sentence that was like, you're going to see the Fae behave differently than humans. So, you know, so act accordingly.
Right.
I remember highlighting it being like, okay, so she's setting this precedent to basically try and excuse some of the behavior.
I agree.
I think was how I took that.
Sure.
Which I was like, that's kind of a cop out. And also it's not going to really work, but okay.
But it is interesting to include it. Yeah.
Yeah. I love your pull out, Christina. I think a dual POV would have really, really benefited in this case. And I think it would have really helped us to see. I mean, we do see, and we'll get to it, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but we do see different sides of Fisher and aspects of him where you do kind of soften towards him and you learn these different facets of his personality and his life and his backstory. And that was done really well. Mm-hmm. I just think, like we've said, it just took a little too long to get there. And I think if we had maybe intersliced a couple of his POV chapters where he's struggling with being mean to her or he's feeling bad for lashing out at her.
Yeah, I think a really good quote that kind of summarizes that a little bit to piggyback off of it. So this is when they're in the pub later and he says, what kind of male likes hurting people? His face is a blank mask when he let me go. I don't enjoy hurting people. I don't like it at all. But that doesn't mean it's not necessary. To avoid far more serious pain, sometimes we have to endure endure a little sting. Sometimes some of us have to inflict it. You say it so mockingly, but I do care about your well-being. You're important. Without you, I can't end this war or protect my people. I have to keep you safe so I can accomplish my goals. So yes, I'll hurt you if it means I'll keep you safe. I'll force you to follow me to the ends of this realm because that is the only way I can make sure you stay alive. Now drink your beer. And I think this is interesting because we got this and I was like, all right, it's something. This is what we're working with. This is the level that he can give us and give her.
Yes.
Is you are important, but you're important to help my people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if we had this with other POVs of him actually caring and being sweet in his mind, this would feel even nicer and sweeter. And it wouldn't feel like, well, this is what all we can get.
Right.
Agreed.
Okay. So moving on, let's talk about the bargain because this is a huge, huge, huge part of Saris and Fisher in general. So... Okay, so basically this all starts because Saris and Fisher have their first little kissing time in the Forge, which is really fun. It's really cute. It's sassy. This is what you were talking about, Anna, where he's like, okay, well, I know you're aroused and intrigued by me. So like, she's like, how do you know that? Anyways, but it's really great. She has this sneaky sneak moment where she steals his quote, magical relic ring from his finger so that she can then go use it to rescue her brother. Okay, mission accomplished. She gets the ring. She runs off to find the Quicksilver pool at the bottom of the castle, but surprise, Fisher's already there. Also surprise, the ring does nothing. Also surprise, he knew that she took it. So, fine.
Yeah.
And then he has this moment. This is one of the funniest sections for Fisher, I think, where we get to see him, his like snarliness, his grumpiness, be just really funny on page to read.
Yeah.
She's like down there by the Quicksilver and she's about to jump in. He's like, you will die. Please, dear God, don't do what you're about to do. And he just says, rule number 3, do not make me do any physical activity. He snarled, what part of I am hungover did you not fucking understand? It's just so funny. Like, he is funny in his grumpiness sometimes. It's like, I don't remember it because all I can think about is him being mean to her. But there are funny grumpiness moments.
Oh, yeah. This part was hilarious.
This part was good. I love the hangover bit.
Me too. Yeah. It was hilarious.
And relatable.
Yes. He also doesn't have a room or anywhere like to go lay off his hangover. So he just in the library and trying to eat. The librarian's like, no crumbies. And he's like, God damn it.
I just like eating your Whataburger.
Yeah.
Exactly. It would be like, can I just lay down and watch some TV? God.
Please.
Okay. So he's like, fine. I don't want you to die and kill yourself. I'll make a damn bargain with you because she's about to jump in and go get her brother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He says, I'll make a bargain with you. Here's the exact words of the bargain. I go and I try to get your brother. You help me and assist me in any way I ask you to, and you do as you're told. You agree to this pact? You understand that this is a blood oath and you will be bound by this oath until death? And she's like, yep, 100%. I agree tenfold. Here's my blood. Woo woo. Sounds good to me.
No hesitation.
None. No hesitation. I also really want to reiterate the part that says, you will assist me in any way I ask. You will do as you're told. Because that really starts a lot of stuff with them that at sometimes we felt like was dubious consent. It was a fine line to toe by Callie Hart. Although I do think it ended up fine. Mm-hmm. I think it was an interesting
choice.
Yes. Okay. So he goes in the Quicksilver. He comes back, but oops-a-daisy. He doesn't bring back her brother. He brings back Carrion. Oh my God, what a treat. I have never been more thrilled for a character to have mistakenly come into our lives.
Same.
It took maybe like 3 sentences of Carrion being on page and I was like, oh, I would hands down prefer him here than your brother. Like, oh my God, yes. He's incredible.
Did anybody else get a little concerned that she had incest? Because I was like, wait a second.
Okay, so, okay, Nicole from the podcast also texted us.
I was going to say no, but Nicole did.
So you and Nicole were same brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, because pretty much the way it is said is he said, I have your blood now. I'll go find your brother. We've also had her on page say that Carrion was like the best lay of her life, that they have really good sex. So him coming back with Carrion and be like, are you sure he's not your brother? And in our mind, we're like, this is Kingfisher. He has her blood. Was she not sure? It's like, oh no.
Oh, no.
That's not the case. So it's fine.
It's fine.
I didn't think about it really. But when Nicole texted us, I was like, I see where you got that. But no, just keep going.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, pretty much we have Carrion with us now, which is an utter treat. The next thing that happens is they escape the Winter Palace. They go meet Ren at this pub, which was a very interesting turning point because all of a sudden, all the patrons at this pub start bowing to him. They start saying how wonderful he is. They start saying how an honor it is to meet him and have him in their presence. And like, please touch my sword, you great honorable god of a man. Like, it's huge. And at this point, Saris has heard no one say good things about him, but pretty much at all.
Yeah.
And everyone in the court hates him. him. His sister's like, God, be nicer, stop. I think this was huge, huge, huge for her seeing random Joe Schmo drop a knee and say how incredible he is.
Totally.
Now, right. Not so great, though, for our Kingfisher. Fisher doesn't do well with feelings. He really doesn't do well with people telling him he's great because he thinks he's not.
Yeah.
So he's like, I don't deserve this. This makes me feel uncomfortable. We got to get the hell out of here right now. So he like runs away. Like literally a guy's kneeling in front of him and he's like, please leave. I cannot deal with you. Yes. All right. So they go, they run to the Shadow Gate. This is a time he does use the oath. He makes her go through the Shadow Gate, which this was, you know, she had to go. It's fine. But they go and they end up in Kalish, where Kim is going to be our tour guide. Take it away, Kim.
I am. Welcome to Kalish, everybody. Basically, Carrion is like knocked out and on the back of the horse for their journey through the Shadow Gate.
Goddamn hilarious.
It's so funny.
He's just like flopping.
Yes.
It was flopping so good.
On the back
so
of the
good.
Horse. It's hilarious. He wakes up. We'll talk more about Carrion later. But basically he wakes up and Sarah's just like, where's my brother? Where is Hayden? Like, what the fuck? And he's like, oh, don't worry about it. I got him papers to live in the 7th Ward. Ooh. Why Carrion couldn't have gotten Sarah's and Hayden papers to get out of the 3rd Ward earlier is, I think, a question we all had and we didn't really understand it.
You're telling me that Carrion also, you lived in the shit ward. The ward with the shit and the water and the gross dirty times.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
When you could have also gotten yourself the papers to go.
Yeah. I think she does say in the beginning that he doesn't, he lives in another ward, but he comes to the 3rd ward because of his grandmother.
Oh, right. Is that the lady who raised him when she took him from the palace?
Yes.
Okay.
So, but he doesn't stay, like his house is not in the 3rd ward. So like he gets to go home to a different ward. Mm-hmm. Again, if it was that easy to pull people out of the ward, I don't know why we didn't do it earlier, but fantasy reasons.
Oh, you know what, guys? Maybe when they hooked up, he was like, come to my ward. You can take a bath and then we'll hook up in my neck of the woods.
Yes.
Let's go with that.
That's what happened.
Let's go with that.
Canon of it.
It's all back to the bath. It always comes back to the bath.
That's right. You know what? It does. Because it's important. And that is now canon in my mind that she bathes at his house. There we
go. That's why it's the best lay she's ever had, because it was post
because she was clean.
Yeah.
That's right. She has not never bathed in her life. It's just rarely that
she
bathes.
It's just only when she has sex with Carrion.
Yes.
That's right. Good times. That's right. Good times. Okay. So Carrion is not at all phased to be here in the Fae world. Why? Maybe because he is Fae. At the time, I just took it to mean he was a cool, chill, go-with-the-flow dude.
Me too!
Same.
I'm here for the vibes. I'm here for a good time, not for a long time. Like, let's just see what happens. And at the time, I was like, nice.
I didn't question it at all. I was like, oh, how refreshing.
I love this. He's not freaking out. No. He's not asking questions. He's like, cool, I'm gonna go find my other boot, and I'll see you in a
I wish
bit.
I could be Carrion.
Literally. Could never be me, but would love it.
Could never.
A really interesting conversation that happens pretty quickly in Kalish is Ren has a really good conversation with Sarris. And this is, again, one of the, maybe the second instance that we get a POV into Fisher's kind of lack of mental health. And I did love this quote. He talks to Sarris and he says, he used to be kinder, but the quicksilver inside of him, it makes it difficult for him to think straight. It wears on him. It's exhausting for him shutting out the voices. It's made him hard. They aren't excuses, Sarris. I've known him my whole life. We were born to different parents, but we're brothers in every other way that counts. Aww. I know him better than I know myself. It's giving Dorian a kill. The first time Bellican forced him to travel without a relic, the silver infected him so badly that I thought we'd lost him altogether. His mind was so fractured. Let's just say it took a long time for him to recover. The healers did their best, but the piece that remains in his eye torments him night and day. His mother's relic doesn't seem to be as effective anymore, and now he's been exposed to the quicksilver twice without it again. I just don't know what to expect from him anymore.
Oh. This is a perfect example of the chronic pain you were talking about and our insight through Ren into him.
Ren was a necessary character.
Absolutely.
Even if his whole basically point of his existence in this book is to just make us like Fisher.
Yeah.
It worked.
That's fine. It worked.
Mission accomplished. Yes. We love the fire sprites. They are Presh Pots. I love Archer. I thought seeing him again interact with Fisher was a great lens into Fisher's maybe true persona, and you see him be so kind and caring and laugh with Archer. Mm. And you can tell Archer genuinely cares for Fisher and missed him, and you know that would not be the case if Fisher was truly this evil, mean person.
Right.
And to see him be vulnerable with Archer and be like, I miss you too, friend, and he hugs him, and it is just really heartwarming to see. And this was when I was like, okay, I'm liking what we're seeing. I'm liking this.
Leave it to Kim. It has to take a fire sprite to like you for Kim to like you.
Hey, if the fire sprites like you, you're cool in her book.
I was like, you're good people.
Good people.
You're good people, Fisher.
But you can tell a lot by how somebody treats people who are deemed lesser than them, you know?
Absolutely.
And they liked him.
Absolutely. Yes. So Rin tells Fisher, hey, you need to be nicer to Ceres. I understand that she is a means to an end for you, but like, you're gonna push her away if you don't stop being such an asshole. So I think you guys need to start having dinner together. It's giving Beauty and the Beast, okay?
Beauty and
the Beast.
Incredible.
Okay? We need to have dinner together. Yes. Come dine with me. And she does.
Be our guest.
Yeah, be our guest. Put our service to the test. They're sitting at opposite ends of the table, and for some reason that doesn't matter. Ceres is like, I don't like the seat. I'm gonna get up and come sit next to you. Archer loses his damn mind and is like, oh, master, what's happening?
Oh no.
The table setting.
And Ceres is like, I don't, should I move?
It's a chair.
What's happening? And so instantly we're clued in, like, something is off about this. And Fisher's like, no, it's fine. Ceres clearly doesn't understand, like, the etiquette of dinner.
She's but a lowly human.
She's poor.
She's a poor. So they're chatting. Uh-oh, the feeders show up, which are a type of vampire, but in our minds, they're very much zombies. Okay, it's giving zombies. Yes. They're creepy as fuck, and they attack, and Fisher and Ceres are fighting them. Ceres gets injured, and Fisher's like, has that moment where he's like, get off of her, and he rips the feeder off of her, and he's like, are you okay? And he grabs her, and it's...
I ate this up.
It's giving mates.
I ate it up. I was like, oh god.
Yes.
He does love her. He's protective.
It's happening. So he freaks out and takes her to his room.
Also a big deal.
Uh-oh. His private quarters.
Okay.
So then we go to the war camp. War camp is battles. Battles happen. Things are happening. Yep. Does that matter? No, it does not. Mm-hmm. Because you know what's happening inside the tent? A makeout session between Fisher and Ceres. People, it's happening. They have a very sweet conversation. And I just love Ceres. I just love her. She's such a sweetie. They're having a conversation and she's like, okay, would you stop fighting me? And can you maybe just accept that, like, I might want to be here of my own accord and help you? And she was like, have you paused to consider that I might want to stay alive, that I do whatever it was you wanted me to do? If you just explained why it was important to my well-being, I want to help you, Fisher. I'll do it gladly. I might not understand your people or even believe that everyone in this realm deserves saving, but that's not my judgment call to make, is it? For some reason, I have this weird ability that can help protect Evelia from being ravaged by a tide of corrupted, bloodthirsty monsters. I've seen what they're capable of. I know how horrifying they are, and I wouldn't wish them upon anyone. Can't you just trust that I... And he crosses the room, and he grabs her face, and he kisses her!
Yes! We have been dancing around this.
We were all screaming. I was like, give it to me, finally!
We go from, like, he's so mean, and why is he just being so nasty? And then kiss her!
Kiss her!
You know, I know that we have a problem with how mean he was at the beginning, but whatever it did inside me made this part exciting and good.
So exciting, because you know he's been fighting it. He has been fighting against his attraction.
Oh, wait, Kim, keep going. The best part.
Okay. So then they make out, and he, like, kind of freaks out. I think she's, like, moaning, and it triggers something in him, and he rips himself away.
Oh, no.
And we obviously now know that, like, they were mates, and he's freaking out because I'm a mess, and I don't deserve her, and I'm not gonna live, so what is the point of this? What are we doing?
Oh, sweetheart.
Angel man. And so she kind of sees him, like, struggling, and she says, Fisher. And he walks back up to her and gently cups her face and places her hand over his heart, which is a mirror to what he did back at the Winter Palace, only this time he's not being mean and taunting her. And his heart is beating erratically. And it says, I tried to pull my hand away, startled by the thundering rhythm, but Fisher held me there tight. He didn't say a word. He held my gaze, unblinking, and for once, the quicksilver that marked his eye was still. There was no arrogance in his features, no bravado, no smug smirk. The look he was giving me was deadly serious, like it meant something. He swallowed, his chest rising and falling too fast, and then he nodded. I can't trust anything, he whispered breathlessly.
Oh no.
This tortured soul shadow daddy.
He can't trust anything. And the way that he just, like, holds her face and he's like, don't talk. Like, I can't speak right now.
It's just, there's too much, and I love you so much. It's so overwhelming.
For the man who hates feelings, it's too much.
Right. It's literally giving, I love you, it's ruining my life. You know what I mean? He's a tortured poet.
He is our tortured poet.
He is a tortured poet.
TTPD.
TTPD. Okay, so he comes out, and basically, this is the first time his soldiers, his men and women, have really seen him since he's returned. They want to know, like, where have you been? And we all know he cannot, like, physically cannot tell them where he's been.
Right.
So he's trying to explain his absence, but he's oath-bound. And most people are understanding of this, except for a bitch named Anya. And
fucking bitch. I hate her.
I hate her so much. I hate her. She's like, I don't trust you. I think you're a traitor. She literally goes to attack him, which, the audacity of this bitch.
Right? Take all the damn seats, Danya.
Fuck off. Ugh. And Saris is like, oh, no, no. We're not going to let that happen. Mm-hmm. And Danya is like charging with her sword. Yes. And Saris is like, mm-mm. And shatters her sword.
Yes.
And it goes into a million pieces and like goes up into the ceiling.
It was incredible.
And everyone's like,
okay.
Oh, shit.
And then isn't this when they're like, we have an alchemist? And the Fisher just goes, she's mine.
She's mine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. God.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Carrion's sitting in the corner like eating quiche like, the fuck?
This tea is piping. Wow. Yeah,
it's like the popcorn meme where he's just like shoveling popcorn and it's quiche. Which is like so much better.
I love Carrion much.
Okay.
Okay, so let's move forward. That happens. They're like, oh shit, she's very powerful. She's the chosen alchemist. And Carrion's like, uh-oh.
And then it's like, icebreakers.
Yes.
Okay, so we have our first like big battle that happens. Mm-hmm. The feeders are attacking over across the border. Apparently they can't swim. So there's like a river.
Convenient.
That is conveniently separates the border where the war camp is and then Sanzeroth. So long story short, their feeders come, they're breaking the ice so that they fall in and they drown. And at the end of this battle, we meet the king of the vampires, Malcolm. So Malcolm lets slip that where Fisher was for the last like 50 years was actually in Sanzeroth with him.
Yeah.
He doesn't say that he was held against his will or that he was in a maze trying to save all of these hundreds of Fae people who are being burned alive again and again and again. Mm-hmm. No, he just makes it sound like that we were hanging out, best buddies, and because Fisher is sworn by a blood oath, he can't say more.
Mm-hmm. He literally says like, I miss you.
Yeah. Come back and visit.
We didn't finish our puzzle.
Yes. So, of course, the soldiers are like, what the fuck? But all of them believe Fisher for the most part, except for Danya.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to run through a few things about Malcolm, who is Fae vampire. So there was a blood curse that happened thousands of years ago, and it turned the Fae into something basically what Malcolm is now. Mm-hmm. But there was a cure, and Malcolm's great-great-grandfather and a lot of the Avellian Fae took it because they didn't like basically that they'd become vampires and that they had to like survive off this blood.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Malcolm, however, refused to take it along with a few others because the blood curse also gave them access to lots of dark magic and he wanted the power.
As the evil ones do.
Yes. And it also, so Fae are not immortal, but vampires are immortal. They basically, as long as they have blood for sustenance, will live forever. The Fae just have extremely long lifespans. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Malcolm is the strongest of them and he basically creates the feeders. Sorry, he does not create the feeders. If he turns somebody, him and his princes, like Taladeus, who we'll meet later, can create a vampire that becomes similar to them, which we kind of start to see with Lane. But if any of the lesser vampires apparently bite a human, then they become feeders. And the feeders just stay zombies.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it.
Got it.
Okay, so after we have that, there's another little, like, sexy time. I mean, you know how war is. It just, like, brings out the sex naturally, right?
It just like turns you on, you know?
It does.
It's like, you know, just like grab and rough and tumble. So they have this like amazing little sexy time, but the big takeaway from it is that Fisher's tattoos seem to travel. Mm-hmm. And this little bird flies like off of his body and flies onto Saris and it like settles on her body.
Uh-huh.
And the next morning when they wake up, it's still there. Mm-hmm. And she's like, excuse me, like, is this gonna continue to happen?
Sir?
And he's a little bit shocked and he's like, I can't. He's kind of like mean about it. But what's interesting is that she's like, okay, well, can I get it removed? And he starts to say, I don't care. Like, I don't care what you do. Mm-hmm. But he can't finish the sentence. Why? Because he can't lie. Because Fae can't lie.
Because he can't lie.
And he does care.
Does care.
So he's like, I don't care. And then he cuts himself off and he's like, sure, cover it if you wish.
I love that.
And love it's really that. Sweet. Yeah. And this is also where we find out that fucking Madra sterilizes. It's like a percentage of human girls who are born. Mm-hmm. And poor Saris is one of them. He says, we have to get you a tonic because we slept together. And she's like, oh, no, don't worry about it. Like, I'm sterile. And he goes deathly still. And he's like, I'm sorry, come again? And she explains it. Mm-hmm. And it's so heartbreaking because it's like he knows this is his mate. And I think he loves her no matter what. Mm-hmm. But the idea that that's something he's thought about. And it's also just this like primal part of him probably is just like, how fucking dare anybody forcibly do that to another human or person.
For sure.
Especially my mate.
Especially my mate.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So Saris and Fisher are getting along now. And basically he wants to take her to visit a special place. And Christina, will you take us to Ballard?
Next on the train tour. Next up, Ballard. Okay. We're going to Ballard and we're going to go to a cutie fair, guys. It's peaceful. It's lovely. Children are laughing. And you know who else is laughing? Fisher. Okay. I have to read this one quick quote. Fisher laughs, which like, let's think about just Fisher as a human. We barely get a smirk and we're like, he is beside himself. Okay. Yes. So he goes to this little town, this fair, and like their guards come down and they're having a lovely time. And he actually laughs at this windy woman who's giving like sweet grandma aunt. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is a quote from Saris. Fisher laughed, really laughed. The sound was rich and deep and made something inside me sit up straight. When I'd picked up a pitcher at the Winter Palace and filled a glass for myself for the first time, I'd thought that sound of that rushing free water would be my favorite sound until the day I died. I was wrong. The sound of Fisher's genuine laughter was rarer than water had ever been back in Zelvarin. It almost brought tears to my eyes to hear it.
Oh my gosh.
Just the imagery there of her being like the sound of water, I thought was going to be my favorite sound. And all of a sudden, this is just so gorgeous and beautiful. I love that moment. So also not so much a gorgeous moment is she does have her body and mind kind of lose control with the quicksilver in Fisher. And it kind of starts making her chant the Anoreth more over and over. And Fisher is very unsettled by this. He is like, I need you to stop saying that. What are you doing?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But because he's bound by the Blood Oath, he can't really explain why, but it is very unsettling to everyone involved.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so they end up going to sleep in this apartment in town. He takes her by the statue of his mom, and he just like all of a sudden has this key to this apartment, and turns out it was his mother's, and now it's his.
Aww.
So we're there. They go to sleep in separate rooms. All right. We have the nightmare scene, everyone. Buckle up.
Oh, God.
Oh.
So she wakes up to him yelling, screaming. He's screaming. It's so sad. This was so humanizing and so smart to put it here because he was just already so sweet and gentle and vulnerable at the fair that whole day. And then this happens that night. And from this point on, I was like, okay, well.
100%.
Yes, here we go.
Yep.
Now, it's so sad to read. It's this horrible nightmare sound that she hears. She runs in. He's screaming, please stop, make it stop. Ugh. He's like, fuck, make it stop. It's so sad. He's having this like seizure and his whole body's kind of like convulsing and like he's rigid and his eyes are open and she's saying like, how long does this last? He's like, and he's trying to get her out. He keeps saying, go. He's like, sometimes a few hours, but it's fine. I'll be fine. Just please go. But it's like clearly a common occurrence that the quicksilver does this to him. It's really, really quite bad.
Oh, it's so sad.
So, sweet Saris is like, I'm gonna hold you through this. She literally positions herself on the bed behind him and holds him. It's so, so sweet. They have in this also a really great conversation because he's like, you know, I could make you go, because she's like, I'm not gonna go. And she says to him in this moment, she chooses he can't fight back, which is actually, it's equal to what he would do to her. So like, I don't blame her. But she says, you will never compel me again. Do you understand? She's like, I am fucking serious. Like she is very, very serious. And he just goes, I understand. And it was so well said. It was important to say. It was important for us to read. I think it came at the right time in the vulnerability to where we're like, this is where we're going. This is us, the couple. This is where we're going from here on out. So.
Absolutely.
All right. So Fisher then is like, distract me. Can you tell me something? Distract me from my voices in my head, the quicksilver. So she doesn't have a happy tale to distract him with, but she does have an important tale for us to hear as the reader.
I love it. She's like, I'm going to tell you the saddest of stories.
Right? He's like, can you distract me sometimes? That helps. And she's like, well, let me tell you about,
and she can't move.
Yeah, let me tell you about my mother. So okay, it is important for us to have the backstory, but she tells us this horrible story about how her mother had to work as pretty much a sex worker to put food on the table, but she also helped the rebels. And eventually she was caught and brutally killed. Saris was there. It was really horrible all around.
Yeah.
Oh, so awful.
Really, really tragic and really kind of shows where she came from. It was important backstory, I think, for everyone with her. Also, what a badass to have experienced that and then still be this confident running shit girl that she is. Just really incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, but Fisher, he's clearly like coming back to his himself. Mm-hmm. And he just says, my mother was killed too. We have that in common, little Osha. Oh God, Osha. Okay, we'll get there.
Osha.
So he also then says, the nightmare time's done. And he just goes, come here. And she says, what?
Oh, I love it.
And he says, don't make me drag you down here. There was a tired but playful catch in his voice. And he pulls her down and they cuddle all night long. Do they cuddle?
I love God, that.
God, it's so sweet. I love the come here. Just come like, here. Come here. God.
Come here. Oh,
everything.
Stop it.
Everything. You know what else is everything? This morning sexy time.
Oh my God. Oh
my Y'all, God.
This man. The way he speaks in bed. I cannot remember the last time we read a fantasy that was this steamy.
Oh my God.
The words that are actually on page are usually in our romances. And then being in a fantasy, I was beside myself. I was like,
so hot.
What is happening?
So hot.
What is happening?
Oh my God.
You know, it really was like he has a mouth on him in all aspects of the book. In every aspect, he is rude to her, but also God, he's hot in bed.
Like praises her.
Oh yeah.
The praise. And okay, so in this one in particular, they're all of a sudden mind speaking. Mm-hmm. She's in italics. He's in italics. He can hear her, but she's like, it's okay. She's distracted by the sexy time. So she's like not really thinking about it.
Sure.
But she is giving him so much consent in her head that he is like running with it. Uh-huh. We have been untethered. He is like, let's fucking go. She's like, please fuck me. Take me, own me. And he just is like, okay.
Take me, own me.
Say less.
God, there's a part where he's like, I'll make you beg, little Osha. Like, fucking Christ. Okay. Oh, okay. Wait, sorry. One more. So, okay.
Say it.
Okay. He says, every warrior in Anir will smell me on you. Fisher's voice rumbled in my mind. I'm going to make you hoarse from screaming my fucking name. I'm going to mark you in every way imaginable so that everyone knows you're fucking mine.
Sir.
The next line is her going, holy shit.
Same, Sarah.
We are Sarahs. Sarahs is us.
Wow. So he's like, he sets a merciless pace. Okay, all right. So, all right. There's a lot of things here. I'm not going to read them all. Okay, but he, in her head, she's saying, bite me, Fisher. Bite me. Do it. I want it. And he's saying, I can't. Mm-hmm. And she's yelling, all caps, italicized, bite me. And he does.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that's important that we've established Mindspeak and we've established that she is like, I'm not only consenting, I am begging you to bite me right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
We have also learned from Lauren that biting is a specific sexy time thing for the Fae. Because the Fae apparently enjoy biting during sex because it heightens arousal and the times in general for everyone involved.
Yeah.
I do think there's also like a claiming situation going on with the biting, which becomes important after this. Okay, so speaking of, the tattoos have gone wild. We just had a little bird. Now we are tatted up, y'all.
Uh-huh.
She's like, hold on.
Hands.
I'm sorry, what is this? Both her hands are covered in tattoos. He's a little flustered by this.
To say the least.
He's like, okay. Because it's this sweet moment. She comes out and he's like, oh, I didn't know how you wanted your coffee. And she's like, oh, how long did you know I've been here? He's like, I always know where you are, little Osha. And it's like, sweet times. And then she's like, okay, but what the fuck's up with my hands? And she says, what does it all mean? I added nervously. Fisher draws in a sharp breath, looking up from my hand. Not much, really. He picked up one of the custard-filled pies and says, here, eat. Your blood sugar's low. And she goes, my blood sugar's low? What? Fisher, what do the tattoos mean? And he's like, all right, well, this one means blessed one. And this one is, you know, like alchemist stuff. And she's like, no, tell me more. But he like actually physically can't tell her more about one specific hand, which we'll get to. But he does offer to glamour the tattoos so no one can see them. They're there, but they're glamoured. Mm-hmm. And he says, you have about 1 month to decide whether or not you want to keep them. And then we'll touch base then.
Yeah.
And she's like, what do you mean? What if I... He's like, no, just understand that I cannot say more.
Yeah.
And you know what? I also cannot say more about this, but you know who can say more? Kim's gonna tell us more about our next locale, the Forge.
Yes.
And some quicksilvering.
So, oh gosh, you guys. Yeah, so the Forge. We've kind of glossed over a lot of Sarahs working in the Forge because nothing's really happened until now when a switch completely flips and she can immediately talk to the Quicksilver, understand the Quicksilver, forge a relic, no issues whatsoever. Cool, fantasy reasons. It's fine.
Yeah, right?
We're moving the plot along. Her and Kirion are hanging out in the Forge and he's like, I don't know, crazy thought, have you just ever asked the Quicksilver to help you? And she's like, you're a fucking idiot. Okay, but actually though, like, could you just maybe help me? And it's like, duh, say like I've been here waiting this whole time, why didn't you just ask
me? I fucking ate this up.
Me too. This is incredible. Also, the carrion, it's like, but like you said, you can talk to it, right? And she's like, yeah.
It's like, just ask it.
So why don't you ask it? And she's like, you dumbass. How dare you speak to me?
Yeah.
Okay, but could you do it?
And it's like, absolutely, yes, absolutely. All I need is, I need a song.
Yes.
Yes, Carrion's great. We love him. I think he was much needed levity in this book. I am obsessed with him. He better be in book 2 is all I have to say about that.
After that reveal, he will be.
Oh my God, he was so funny.
Oh, right. He was so funny. Okay, so Carrion is actually correct. Maybe because he's like a royal fae prince who's been around for, I don't know, probably 1800 years, just like Fisher, and knows everything.
Yeah, maybe.
And so she's trying to reforge Danya's sword. And it says the Quicksilver asks for a song.
Uh-huh.
And so Lorith ends up singing this beautiful song and the blade becomes his. It actually chooses him over Danya.
Mm-hmm.
Oopsie. Darn it. So upset about that. But it also takes the memory of the song from everyone, Lorith and everyone else except for Ceyrus. So Ceyrus is the only one that remembers that this song happened, which is interesting. And it's important to note that from here on out, we go into like kind of a bargaining situation with the Quicksilver. Every time she wants to use it, she has to give something up.
Mm-hmm.
with Carrion, it wants a joke. Because of course it does. It's like, you know what would be fun? Do you like have a joke? And Carrion's like, oh.
Say less.
Yes, I'm so glad you asked. I have the funniest joke. And she's like, I mean, okay. So Carrion gives it a joke.
So good.
And so then she forges the blade for Carrion. And he names his sword Simon.
I lost it.
Simon.
He's so serious. And she's like, so what are you going to name it? And he's like, Simon.
She's like, what? He's like, no, it looks like a Simon, don't you think? Like, if that's not a Simon, I don't know what is.
Don't know what is.
She's like, okay.
Can I show you this book of Latin? Any word in here? No, nope. Simon says, got it.
But an interesting note that during this whole situation is the Quicksilver tells Ceyrus that she needs to save Kingfisher. And specifically it says, save him, save the gates, save Evelia.
Very.
Sounds very prophecy.
It's giving prophecy. Okay.
It really is.
Yeah.
So there is a really sweet moment where Ceyrus and Fisher are in bed and she's like, well, I just talked to the Quicksilver with the sword. I'm just going to try and do a little chitty chat with the Quicksilver inside Fisher and just politely ask it to vacate the premises. And I feel like this is totally going to work. So she talks to it and she's basically begging the Quicksilver to leave him.
Aww.
And he hears her and they have a really sweet conversation about it. But this is really interesting. This is what the Quicksilver says back to Ceyrus.
Mm-hmm.
We gave him his life, a boy, just a boy. He was young when he entered our pool. He should not have survived it. But he was strong, and the grand halls of the universe rang aloud with his purpose. We permitted him to live so that he might fulfill that purpose. We bound ourselves to him that he might survive. This die was cast centuries ago. We accepted our fate, alchemist. All of us did.
Fascinating.
It's giving prophecy. It's giving who are we to fight the alchemy? You know
what I mean? Who are we to fight the alchemy? Oh my God, let's make a reel. This is perfect.
Have you been sitting on that this whole time? Because that is gold. My God, Kimberlyn.
Kimberlyn. Absolutely, I have. 100%.
You have been keeping that in your back pocket.
Ever since I read this, I was like, who are we to fight the alchemy? Touchdown, call me amateurs and cut him from the team. Anyways.
Yes. God, it's good.
I am obsessed.
I will sing the entire album if we don't move on.
Not complaining.
So, next up is the feeders attack again. Icebreakers again. Fisher gives Ceyrus his sword, which is Solas, which was the blade that she pulled out of the you know, King Arthur moment.
Yeah.
And uh-oh, Malcolm has Lane. He has enthralled Everlane and he's captured her.
Oh no.
My God.
Oh no. Okay, but hilariously, they go and they see Lane.
Oh my God.
And Fisher, or someone's like, why is Lane here? And Taladeus, who is Malcolm's son, goes, why do you think? He bid me bring her. She's a trap. He wants to bend you to his will, so he's taken something precious to you and he's broken it. Are you shocked? You will either come here and try to save her, even though doing so would be futile, or else you'll come for vengeance sake. Either way, he knows you'll come. He doesn't care why, only that you do it.
Literally, that's the quote.
Literally, that's it.
Incredible. I love it.
I'm dying.
I don't know what's confusing. We have her. You need to come and get her. This is a trap. She's the bait.
Yeah. You can come for either reason. We don't care why you come. Only that we know that you will.
How many languages do I need to say this in for you to understand?
Don't care how. Just get here. It will happen.
Just get here.
We'll be waiting. RSVP. Yes. We'll be here soon. It's so hilarious and lovely in the plot too, because he's like
so hilarious.
I don't, before you like really think about this too hard, can I just tell you that this is what's gonna happen? So we'll be waiting you here.
Yeah.
Okay. So see you soon.
Don't take too long. I mean, if it makes you feel better, plan for a second. But really, the end goal and the end game here is you're coming here.
You're coming here. So we'll see you very soon.
Yeah.
TTYL. Okay. So basically, they're gonna go brainstorm how to get her. Why? It doesn't matter. They're gonna get witches involved. We think that will be more important in book two, so we're not going to touch on that. But what we are going to touch on is Anna's going to walk us through a beautiful mate convo.
Mates, it's giving mates. We were right. They are mates. Mates, I'm so excited.
Mates. I love that.
It was so validating. I mean, it was not a shocker, but it was so validating too.
No, very validating.
Okay, so they go back to college. They're brainstorming how to get Lane back, and she's busy making relics in the forge. Mm-hmm. Talena stops by, and Saris notes that there's tattoos on her hands that are similar to the ones that are currently glamored on her own hands. Mm-hmm. So she asks Talena about this, and these are the major takeaways. Talena basically says on the 5th wedding anniversary for the modern day Fae, mm-hmm. basically you get your hands tattooed with blessings that you hope that those like blessings eventually manifest. Mm-hmm. And you don't do it before 5 years because Fae marriages can fail. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, so it's not like a mating thing? And she was like, well, true mating bonds don't exist anymore, basically.
Lies.
When the gods left our world, the mating bonds ended. Mm-hmm. I think there's something special about Saris and Fisher, maybe. Who knows? I don't know. Chosen one trope, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm.
The god of chaos will tell us later.
Unions between true mates were blessed with marks from the fates. That's where the tradition of inking our hands originated from. Then, I love Saris is like, so like, they don't just like appear during sex.
Yeah.
Talena literally laughs at her and goes, don't be silly. She's like, cool. Okay,
but like if that did happen, like what would that mean?
So then she notes though that Talena's mating tattoos are tiny little marks on 3 of her 5 fingers. Just little marks that symbolize that she wants children or a healthy life. Mm-hmm. And what Saris is though, Saris has a lot of little marks, but she also has giant script that wraps around her hand and around her wrist. Mm-hmm. And so she asks Talena, well, what about script writing that goes around your wrist? And this is what Talena says. They call it a god binding, a blessing from the gods themselves. They weren't real, of course. The most important couples in Avellian history were said to have had them, but it was all romantic rubbish. Just something storytellers embellished to make their tales more tragic. The lovers in those stories always suffered terribly. One of them always died.
Oh.
They were beautiful, but they ended with heartbreak. So, don't love that foreshadowing, if I'm being honest. Mm-mm. Doesn't sound great.
Nope.
So, Saris is, of course, like, okay, well, clearly Fisher probably knew what these were. So, she confronts him. They have a little bit of a fight. Oh, yeah. And basically, though, we get our chapter 54. If you know, you know. We get our chapter 54 moment. And this is so sweet, guys. Mm-hmm. He explains, which we haven't really talked about, but he calls her Osha, little Osha. And, I mean, you kind of know that it's probably means something more. Mm-hmm. But what he told her in the beginning was that it's a type of butterfly, and because she's a human and so fragile, she'll die just like a butterfly. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be a jab. But what you find out is that the Oshalith butterfly only hatches like once in a Fae's lifetime, and it's super, super rare. Fae will literally die protecting these little butterflies while they hatch. And what it actually means, Osha, is most sacred. So he has been walking around calling her his most sacred for the entire fucking book.
The amount that I want to go back right now and look at every single time he says it, because at times when I think it's so rude and mean, he's actually saying like, oh, my most sacred. Like,
yes.
Jesus, Callie Hart.
And there's a turning point too. He calls her Osha, but then there's like a turning point where he starts to call her Little Osha.
Little Osha.
That's so sweet. Okay, so we also find out from Fisher that his mother was a very powerful seer, and she foresaw that Fisher would have a mate. Mm-hmm. She was actually like drawing pictures of Saris in notebooks.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful. And it's the love of a mother for her child. And she mm-hmm. knew that, you know, she was going to die probably, and that Fisher would need protecting and someone to be there to support him. And she was like, there will be someone for you, and she will be there to like weather the storms with you. Mm-hmm. The only thing though that she got wrong was she kept drawing Saris with pointed ears. So pin that for later.
Uh-oh.
Mm.
What? Weird.
So Fisher explains to, you know, Saris, I've been pushing you away because I feel like my time on this world is limited. This thing inside of me is getting stronger. There isn't a spell in existence strong enough to keep it at bay forever. Mm-hmm. And he basically says that it's going to make him go crazy and he doesn't want to live that life. He doesn't want to be a burden to anyone. Mm-hmm. And he's made Ren promise that when the time comes, if he starts to lose all of his faculties, that he will help him kill himself. Like, he'll die. Mm-hmm. He'd rather do that than hurt somebody he loves. Mm-hmm. And she calls him a coward and she's like, you can't do that. She's of course sad. Like, she's saying all these things to him because she doesn't want him to do that, but also because his soul is tied to Loreth. Mm-hmm. They made a soul bond. And if he dies, Loreth has said, I will also die.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for a dollar. Because saving with deals is always on the menu. With new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
By choice, Loreth is like, I will not spend another breath of like on this planet mm-hmm. if he dies, because his soul will not be able to like move to the afterlife until I die.
Right.
So she's like, if you die, Loreth dies. Mm-hmm. And they fight, they're angry, and basically they go a few days and he invites her back to the apartment and he set up this beautiful romantic setting and he's like, I'm sorry. And
the candles.
There's all these candles and his shadows are making it super sexy and it's really the ambiance is working.
Oh my gosh.
And they have sex and it's like making love. This is not like one of their mm-hmm. big sexy times. It's really sweet. And in the moment, he accepts the mating bond. And she freaks out because she knows that, you know, her lifespan is so much shorter as a human mm-hmm. and that it would kill him if she dies. Mm-hmm. And she's like, how could you do that? And he prefaces with, I've accepted the mating bond, but I don't expect you to. You don't have to. I want to accept it on my end.
Yeah.
And she talks about like her mortality and he says, I'll be grateful for every second that I can say that I belong to you, Sarah Svein. 80 years or 18 hours, it doesn't matter to me. It'll still be the highest honor of my life. And he says, I'm in love with you, Sarah Svein. He whispered quietly into my hair. And I'm already half mad anyway. What's a little complicated thrown into the mix?
Jesus Christ, I love it.
I love it.
It's like what we needed and what we just wanted from them.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. they fall asleep together. And when she wakes up.
Oh, my lord.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Fisher's written a little note. And it's basically a farewell. It's a goodbye mm-hmm. because he's decided that, you know, he is not needed and he is going to sacrifice himself to save Lane. He is going to exchange himself for his sister.
Pretty much he heard Taladeus and was like, well, guess this is our only option after all.
Yep.
So he leaves and he leaves the shadow gate open and he, in the note, he says, I'm going to go get Lane. I'm going to throw her through the portal and you guys just stay there and, you know, seal the portal back up. And Fisher, if you think that anybody is going to follow that, you are insane. The Quicksilver has truly lost your marbles.
You've lost the plot, sir.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that takes us to Loreth, Carrion, and Saris going through the portal to try and save Fisher.
Yeah.
Kim, will you take us to basically the ending of the book?
Yes. So they go through the Shadow Gate. They fall into really hard water. Ouchie, it hurts. They come upon Bellicon, Madra, and Malcolm, our siblings.
Surprise!
What the fuck? They apparently call themselves the Triumvirate, and you have to, yeah. in order to kill one, you have to kill them all. It's giving Voldemort and Horcruxes. Fine. And we finally learn what the whole bargain oath thing that Fisher could never talk about. He made a bad bargain. There was an entire town of people about to be massacred by Malcolm yeah. and his army of feeders, and Fisher was desperate to save them, and he agreed to flip a coin.
The coin flip here felt so silly and strange to me. Like, I understand yeah. the bargain, but for some reason the coin aspect was like, what?
It was weird. It was weird.
Mm-hmm. It was weird. Tails, Fisher wins, and Malcolm releases all the hostages and promises not to harm them. Heads, Malcolm wins and lays siege to the town. Plot twist! Malcolm catches the coin mid-air and it never touches the ground, and therefore the bargain is void, and Fisher is sentenced to solve the maze. And he is down there in that maze.
Guys.
For how many, 100 and something?
50 years.
50 years.
Oh, right, he spends 50 years in the maze, and then he spends 50 years looking for the coin.
Correct.
Because he's there 100 and some, 10 years.
Yeah.
So Malcolm says, I hid Bellicon's coin at its center, and then I created this coliseum around it and filled the stands with the perpetually burning bodies of all the creatures our poor little bleeding heart here had wanted to save.
Oh my God.
All he had to do to end their suffering was find the coin and make it fall to the ground. Okay, neat.
Cool.
Cool. Cool.
We have a daddy is mad moment with Madra that we love. And basically, he just turns to Madra and remember she sterilized Saris.
So good.
And he said, you spayed my mate when she was a fucking child, he seethed. For that alone, I'll make your undying existence an unending agony. An eternity of suffering the likes of which even your evil mind cannot comprehend. You'll know no peace at my hands. I will destroy your empire and erase your name from the annals of time. When I am done with your legacy, Madra the Undying will never have existed. And you'll live on at my behest, suffering for all of eternity. And no one will know and no one will care.
Yes, 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 yes.
Oh my God.
Let's go.
We fucking love to see it. Okay.
Yes.
Chaos happens. We get down into the maze. There's a creepy spider demon. Mm-hmm. She's following the Quicksilver. Uh-oh, turns out the Quicksilver coin is inside said creepy spider demon's dead body. She has to reach her hand down in there, which, by the way, terrifying. Could never be me. I'd be like, well, we're all gonna die.
We all know I don't do spiders.
Put me in those stands.
Literally. So sorry to all of you people, but I'm not sticking my hand down in there. Okay? Not gonna do it. But she does.
But she does.
Because she's the chosen one. Oh, but first, uh-oh, carry-on reveal. Y'all, what the fuck? I did not see this coming.
In a book where I felt like everything was kind of like, okay, yeah, I knew.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Same.
I had no clue.
Yeah.
This was so fun.
This was such a great reveal.
So great. So basically, Carrion says, my name is Carrion Swift, but there was a time when I was known as Carrion Dianthus, firstborn son to Rurik and Amelia Dianthus.
Incredible. Incredible. I loved this.
Mic drop.
Wow. And of course, Heavenly Fire, Dianthus' blood is poisonous to Malcolm, and it makes him weak. And that's why Carrion allowed Malcolm to feed from him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Saris finds the Quicksilver coin. Uh-oh, Malcolm's there. They're battling. He mortally wounds her. She's gonna die. Taladeus shows up and is like, okay, she's gonna die if I don't turn her into a vampire.
I love this exchange. Stakes were high.
Yes.
What was going
on? And before, right before this part, she accepts the mating bond.
Yes.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. She accepts the mating bond with Fisher, and the Quicksilver says, we'll help you, but we require a small favor. She's like, small favor. Sure. Cool. Let's do it. Again, we're still not picking up on the fact that we need to be very careful with what we're saying, but fine.
Yeah.
So she accepts it. She beheads Malcolm.
Yeah, important.
She's gonna die. Taladeus is like, okay, I need to turn her. She can't talk because she's dying, but luckily, obviously, her and Fisher have that mind speak, and he's like, she consents. Go ahead.
I love that. He's like, I need to have her consent. We have seconds. Does she consent?
Yeah.
She consents!
Yeah.
She consents! I loved it.
So it's giving Bella Swan from Twilight.
Yes.
And then we go into this, like, dream sequence with the gods. Christina, take us there.
Goodness gracious. Okay, so this is already crazy enough. Like, oh, she's become a, what's going on? She's been turned. And then she wakes up and there's these pretty much teenage girls who are gods who are like, hey, what's up? They're Xerath, God of Chaos's daughters, we find out. And they're like, tell us what it's like. And she's like, excuse me, what? Where am I? Like, no, not important. What's important is I want to know what it's like to have sex with Fisher. And she's like, are you fucking kidding me? What is going on right
so
now?
Weird.
I also thought this was strange. I was like, we could have had them be creepy little, like, where is she? Give us context clues without them really, really super focused on what sex is like with their dad's, quote, champion.
Yeah, super weird.
So also, moving on, we get to Xerath, who is God of Chaos, all right? So we're already like, first you're a God of Chaos, what's going on? And he's just really playing up that God thing. He's like, oh yeah, so there's rot spreading through his domain. So I'm gonna just wipe out the entire billions of people. He's like, oh yeah, no, when that happens, we get rid of it. And she's like, how many people? He's like, oh, billions. It's fine.
Wild.
Casually
destroying worlds in a snap of a finger.
Super dupes casual about it. He's showing her this tree of life thing. There's a lot of imagery and leaves and places are leaves and it's a whole thing. But I'm just the rundown.
Yeah.
Turns out that the gods were keeping Fisher and Saris apart. She was originally supposed to be born Fae, which is why Fisher's mom saw her with the pointy ears in the vision and the drawings.
That's right.
But the gods intervened. They're like, no, that can't happen because, quote, threads like you and Kingfisher that are drawn together and cross on an axis create a well of power. The energy the two of you draw draw together attracts an equal and opposite counterweight. Every possible future where the two of you are together ends with the vast majority of the tree dying. None of us can foresee another way. So she's like, well, that sounds real bad. Because I also just accept our mating bond. What?
Yeah.
So then he pretty much is like, all right, all right, all right. I actually like you guys. Like, I'm on your team. Mm-hmm. So although I can't see a path forward that doesn't end in destruction, casual, fine, I do see some paths of, quote, uncertainty in each of those paths. And in each of those uncertain paths, Saris and Fisher, you are both godbound and you're fighting side by side. So that seems promising. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about god bindings. The god binding marks them as the wards of the god of chaos, mm-hmm. and protects them from the eyes of the other gods. Mm-hmm. He also says, if you truly accept Fisher as your mate, then you must agree for the thread of your life to be severed from the tapestry of the universe. Once you do, none of us may affect your future. We won't be able to see you at all, nor will my brothers and sister be able to interfere with timelines or events that affect you either. You'll be totally on your own. Mm. She's like, but how? How would you do that? How would this happen? And he says, by transforming you into something that has never been seen before, the universe cannot focus on that which it does not recognize. So, guess what that is? It's a half vampire, half fae vampire queen. Da-da-da!
That's right.
I love this.
That's who our girl Saris is, turns out.
Yep.
And yeah, so she wakes up, she's there. Teledeus is like, so you've become a vampire, but also you're half fae, you have the ears. And she's like, what? Oh my god. And then Fisher's like, and the people want to meet you because you are their queen. Dun dun dun.
You are the queen.
That's the way it ends, is like opening the doors and it's like, and your coronation is tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's a wild
like,
ride.
I'm sorry. I took a bath for the first time 2 days ago.
Guys, a lot's happening.
Can we slow down? I need some water.
I just learned what snow was like 60 hours ago.
I've never used shampoo and conditioner in my hair before. Like, come
oh
on.
God,
anyways, okay. So yeah, so the only other thing is really the takeaway from the end here is the witch who is helping unenthrall Lane has found a way to help Fisher
yes.
with that pesky Quicksilver. So that's, I think, going to
yep.
be super important in book two.
For sure.
But I mean, that's what kind of wraps up the plot
yeah.
here. That's where we leave off.
Yeah, I'm excited for book two.
Yeah, me too.
The back of the book says it's coming out this October, but I have yet to see anything from the author or online.
Right.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll be interested to see what happens. We know that Malcolm kind of comments that Saris basically can control a lot more elements than just metal. At the very end there, I kind of skipped over.
That's really interesting.
He says, earth, air, fire, water, salt, brimstone, quicksilver, the full gamut, more power than any alchemist I've ever encountered. You are capable of restoring me to my power and a lot more besides.
Yes. And okay, that's really interesting because he says you're capable of restoring me to my power. And this was also interesting because she beheads him and we're told that he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
But what he says is we are the triumvirate, three crowns sharing one source.
Mm-hmm.
To kill one of us, you must kill us all. And that is no easy task. So, but the head is gone.
Yeah.
And we've established that that is a way to ensure that that person is dead because you cannot reattach a head.
Did his power go somewhere else?
What I'm thinking is that maybe he's going to be in another body.
Oh, God.
Mm. I don't know, because they made a big point of saying you have to kill all of us. So
right.
I think that he is going to, I don't know, maybe he'll be Heron.
Ooh, plot twist.
Oh, ooh, interesting. Ooh. Yeah, so I'm excited. So Saris is the vampire
yeah.
queen?
That's going to be fun. I feel like at this point out, what I'm excited about for book two is we've established we only have protective obsessed Kingfisher.
Yes.
Like, that's where
that's
we're
right.
going. We're not backtracking, clearly. He's obsessed with her and their mates.
Yes.
So, like, I'm really going to be in book two for the romance. What I was eating up with this
uh-huh.
spoon the last 25% is going to be the whole book.
Uh-huh.
100%.
I want that possessive, obsessive, give it to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You can't have her. She's mine.
Yep.
Yes. Oh.
Oh, we love to see it. Okay, that's going to wrap up Quicksilver. We are excited for book two. Whenever it does come out, we don't know. If you want to hear more thoughts, we do have chapter chats over on our Patreon for tier two that break down a lot more thoughts than this.
Mm-hmm.
So be sure to go check that out. That link will be in our show notes. And make sure you are following us on Instagram at Flights of Fantasy Podcast and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And until next time, cheers and happy reading.
Happy reading, friends. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.